다야 예 상한지
최다도지 존나
자주 버릇다네 실수지 나게 해결제
별소남지
돌아대시 상징으로 상한지
최다도지 존나
자주 버릇다네 실수지 나게 해결제
별소남지
노라벤시 토자라나메가 양다부 조비 산지지 공부를 뭐 이긴지 토브라 샤고 테토브라 샤위 체도 담베 체여름 뭐지 세인현비 그놈 샹주지 샘지 제 세메고네 샘브르슈
Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings with that kind of what we call bodhicitta motivation, the highest kind of motivation that one could cultivate. We should participate in this teaching.
Wala ta ngaran chamalo ki dungi ta dungi ki jo thungi ta dewa ji ta ani dewa ta devi jo kali ji na te rang le yuya ge sam na ta ne ta chudu yor bas.
I believe that all of us have taken interest in cultivating dharma or spirituality just because deep down inside us we would like to get rid of suffering and its causes because we don't like them, don't want them, and deep down inside us we are seeking happiness and its causes because we like them and we would like to have them.
pa hiwa tang sen dukcha te pa meba zene ti lo sho ta rang ta yin le pen be sam lu ki ta 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 ting ba che gu yo res.
So in order to fulfill our deepest wishes, if you will, which I just briefly mentioned, it is not only very pertinent but essential for us to see that now our unsubdued mind needs to be subdued, or our undisciplined, untrained mind needs to be trained. And so in the process what we are trying to do is we try to stop or get rid of, if you will, unhealthy attitudes or states of mind, which include negativities, and we try to cultivate positive states of mind or attitudes, which especially consists of cultivating altruism, beneficial attitudes towards other sentient beings.
So,
As I often mention this, that we are living at such a particular time which is characterized by what we call, for lack of more eloquent and better words, five degenerations or five dregs. And so living in such a time and situations, what we find ourselves experience is that, you know, when it comes to misery and unwanted problem suffering, they befall us, it is like a torrential rain, you know, it's just a downpour of suffering and problems on us. But when it comes to experiencing, you know, real peace and happiness, it's like a day star. It just only happens once in a blue moon. You know, it's very rare.
So on that, Maranzo Tola, Ranta Yenge Tola, Vega, Mudebi Dumit and Zur, Shonsetti Kanishan Vizana, are Sim Maduata Magui, Ranta Yenge, Sim Maduata Magui Tony, the laying of a saling about the Namit and Debutta, and eh, Ranta Yen Yon Imbatta, never song tongue.
So now, if we ask this question to ourselves, you know, where do all these problems and suffering, or the bad things that we obviously don't want, but they befall us, you know, in abundance, if you will, what is the real source of all of these problems that we encounter in our life, or that others encounter in their lives? Well, the source is, it's not something outside, really. It is what we have got inside us. It is because our own mind is not tamed, it's not subdued, it's not trained or disciplined, you know. So because of that, because of unsubdued state of mind, what happens is we and others, you know, we go through the same process, we engage in or we get involved in creating negative karmic actions, right? Negative karmic actions are motivated by unsubdued state of mind. So then, you know, what we get out of all this is we get suffering and problems as their ripening results. Okay, so we have to understand, you know, maybe, you know, if you put it in a mathematical equation, you know, it is like bad motivation, you know, and doing the bad action leads to bad result. And that's what we have been doing, caught ourselves doing it, and that's how we end up, you know, encountering the problems that we don't want in our life.
Leje nami ngemba ran ta yin thol mi simba de ta mi da mi simba da mi yimba de ta che na res yina ya ani shin jung ani ti nami gen de bte yan ya de mo ye ta ti ga ja she ta ran so ta da la pe no ye de res.
So whether it is good karma that we have created or a bad karma that we have created, which has already ripened upon ourselves. So in the case of a good karma, now the ripening result that we experience now, here and now, is a good result. Or bad karma that we created, which has already ripened now, so the result we experience here and now is a bad result. So this we can't do much here. It is too late to interfere with the outcome of the karmas. You know, it's too late. It's just right here, and you just got to experience it. There's nothing one can do about it. But what we really need to understand and keep in our mind is this, that all the good and bad karmas that we have already accumulated, we have not yet, you know, produced their results. Maybe we can do something about them. Of course, we don't want to mess up with the outcomes of the good karmas, you know, but we can do something with the outcomes of the bad karmas, because these karmas have not yet ripened. You see, their outcome is in the future, it's not right here. So what we can do is we can counteract our bad karmas with antidotes so that these bad karmas will be purified or decreased or minimized, and they really don't bring out the bad outcomes in the future.
Tan tila ane gawa tan megiwi ane dusin tig thala dusini nyamdu shu pacha gaya thalta chwe jabna kya gyor. Shem sunso maran zilta megiwi ane ta rang sem changma thale megiwi magu bachi she gyor.
So we may use this metaphor to understand our mind. Mind that we have in a generic sense is like a piece of plain cloth, it's a white cloth. You see, it's unstained, and that's, you know, what it is. But then all this bad and good karmas we create, so it is similar to we are dyeing the plain clothes with some kind of color, you know. And so obviously we don't want the wrong color, you know, here. And which, in other words, to say that we do not want to create negativities which would stain our mind.
So,
As I mentioned this before, that in our dedication prayers, you know, we could and we should pray that bless us or inspire us to be able to direct our mind into spirituality or dharma, so that our mind, you see, is one with spirituality. There is no disparity or a gap, you know, between mind and the dharma, so that we are able to cultivate spirituality as spiritual path within our mind, okay? So that we are able to overcome the obstacles or interruptions on our way, in that we are able to, cultivate the spiritual path to the greatest extent possible. We succeed in doing that. So we make those dedication prayers, but if we try to simplify all of these things, you see, if you say, what is the bottom line? Just speak, you know, in the simplest terms you could, and which I often try to do, is this, that in our everyday life, we should see that, you know, our body, speech, and mind, which all of us have got, these three things, right? This is how we perform, you see, actions. So our actions of body, speech, and mind, they, you know, become positive actions. We don't want to use our body, speech, and mind to do something harmful, something negative.
Just
a little while ago, what I said was that in a generic sense, that we were living through, in some sense, the worst of the time. We talk about five degenerations or five dregs, okay? So which means that, you know, we are really not in a happy time and situation, you know, and things obviously go more, you know, bad and worse than good, okay? But that is a, you know, it's a description of, if you will, the general situation in which, you know, we may say we find ourselves in. But then what really makes the difference, you know, what you or I as an individual person experience go through, but that has to do with one's own good and bad karmas. Okay, it doesn't mean that, okay, now we are living through all this, you know, horrible times called, Buddhists call it five degenerations or whatever, you know, so life is kind of screwed up and it's a mess, so this is pretty much it. You know, no. As an individual, you see, if we do a lot of good karmas, because these good karmas will have their good results. So as an individual, one doesn't have to go through all the messy life, you know. You know, even though we live in a generic sense in a really bad time. Okay. And so this is what we can understand, right? When we look around with the people or beings in the same neighborhood or in the same city, that's what Geshe-la said, Tongger is a city, you know, that all people are not going through the same, you know, situations and experiences. There are people whose life seems to be much better. They have a quality life, you see, and the way they are living is really much more peaceful and, you know, whatnot. And these people do not seem to go through all the headaches and, you know, terrible things that other people in the same city are going through. Why? We are all living through the same five degenerations, but the difference here is because of one's own karmic actions. So we can do something about our own experiences of different things, you see, modifying our behaviors or our karmas. So as we speak about, okay, you know, our goal is to experience, you know, real peace, real happiness, you know, and true well-being. Well, then some might get this notion of, okay, so I'm really seeking peace, so therefore, what I'm going to do is I'm going to isolate myself from the rest of the society, all the people, okay, so I'm going to go and stay in a solitude. So basically, I will be a loner, you know. I don't do anything with the people because that is miserable and all disturbances and whatnot. Okay, so peace means, finding peace means I'm going to find a solitude, stay alone, nothing to do with people, and so as if that will bring peace. Well, we could stay alone in a solitude with nobody around, but our mind can be churning out all the negativities that one could possibly think or imagine, or we can't imagine even. Okay, so in such a case, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's much better to live in a city in a nice and friendly, you know, people, rather than just as if you are in a solitude and going crazy with all the negative thoughts, you see, because that doesn't work. That doesn't bring peace. So to bring peace of mind, to bring happiness, what we are really basically saying is, how best can we discipline or control our own mind? It's not so much the location where you live. You could live in a society crazy, but if you have learned to control your state of mind and discipline your mind, you could still find peace, relative peace, of course. If you don't know how to do that, we could be living in the, you know, Amazon jungle. Kishala didn't say that, but just to, you know, wake you all up. And alone, with nobody around, but life will be hell, you know. And so it's basically to do with training our mind, controlling our mind. Don't let mind control us, but how can we control our mind, you know, and do the right thing.
Ngaranchu ge semte langjing hyeomba na gi chagres langjing hyeomba ko ga ba chembi no ko te neba she ki ma to ani penta gi rae mo te pen mi so ka me na ya pe ta hin dan na se dan kare se ta zhi hin la so ba den de me ton de de yen ta ka ngal pe to rae ki ma to ko le chi chi to ba ji ya ma ra ba se te na ki ngaran zo semte o langjing hyeomba na gi chagres je zo ding zen ta gol jing gi zo ge rang sim launching him but any tembe and tabaki tembe tabaka ne pe ta mi ba karin til ba ta gres to so ya res.
So when our mind is diluted, when our mind is unsubdued, then what we really can see is that our mind is just a crazy elephant. Okay, so what can we expect out of a crazy elephant? Nothing but destructions. Right? If a crazy elephant runs through the neighborhood or town, it's going to kill a lot of people and destroy, you know, a lot. Well, if a crazy elephant is in the jungle with no people around, still it will destroy a lot of the, you know, jungle. And if crazy elephant goes into a beautiful park or a flower, it's going to destroy all the flowers. That's what the crazy elephant does, you know. And when our mind is deluded, it is not disciplined, that's what our mind does, you know. So what we are really doing, when people talk about meditation, you know, I'm going to do meditation practice, what they're really trying to do is they're trying to find a way or a means to tame their mind. Okay? And there are many techniques. But one of the, you know, most prevalent techniques that meditators use is they use mindfulness, Tenpa in Tibetan, right? They use mindfulness to bring our mind into focus, so that it will stay focused on whatever subject or object. You see, English language is beautiful, right? If I say object, then some people get upset. It's not object, it's subject. And subject then says, what's object? Anyway, you know what I'm saying. It's the focus of meditation, right? And so with mindfulness, you bring your mind into focus on whatever the things you are focusing on, subject, object, object, subject, whatever it is, right? And that's how we discipline our mind.
Yeah, so 다 텐데시네 간시 라레 문제 베리 카르톤 다티 랑 라메 부족요 텐 페네티 합 다 마리피 왕긴 아주 또 통고야 말이스 페나 랑기 데차키 데티무 랑길게 베 마릴 파시 안 데차시 아니 나제시 다 아 근데 뜻은 정말로 다 미기위 미기위 심튼 조가니 Rangil yepi mi give same thing Ram ever zogyo. That thing as you have of your marriage.
And also we don't know how much delusions, you know, in a way diminish or undermine ourselves. You see, just we can talk about any delusions. We can talk about the three poisons or the poisonous delusions, ignorance, attachment, hatred. While add to the list other things like a jealousy, you know, egomaniac or whatever the things. What all of these delusions, you know, do is that when they pop up, they are diminishing and undermining our own state of being. It's not just only we are creating our, you know, miseries to others' lives, but these delusions inside our mind are undermining our own state of being, you see, and we don't realize that.
Rangla never saying it, duhshu duhshu ti. Rangla, rangla, nyin ta tseng kanga, susuila ni, pe ne cha ne, ne sandra viyar ne. That two thousand nine to ten condina, Rang never seen to shoot his thing, Rang, Rang the name the 2000 drone degurus, that they have who am I staying around. Marans of that sure upon to stay there, stay my Tajuamar, that none of you among this kind of.
And we are so used to identifying enemies as someone out there. You see, we always chase the enemy out there, somewhere, you see, in the mountains and valleys and nooks and corners of the world. But we really never pay attention to where the real enemy is. It is really residing in us. And the really worse than that is, it's with us all the time, 24 hours. You see, delusions don't go into sleep when we are sleeping. It's still there with us, okay? Of course, when we are in a wakeful state, well, they are there, you see? And so, you know, day in and day out, the real enemy, you know, who is residing in us, is with us all the time. There's not a moment where we are really free from them. And really, that's what we really need to recognize and we need to understand. We are chasing the wrong enemies. We are really not paying attention to the real enemy that is inside us.
So, that's the same thing about the two drunkies of Samaloki. And that meal never much ever shit. And the rank is the same rank. That rank is the same rank. And that me gave you shoulder dogon ten do ma kibish gave you shoulder casino pa ani the coin coin na me ta bando to be chen kores.
So as you know, practitioners of dharma, or those who are interested in practicing dharma, you know, we need to pay attention to these matters or the issues which I just kind of briefly outlined. And then what we really need to do is this, that whatever we do, say, or think, you know, we are not thinking unkindly of others. We are not saying something that hurts others. We don't do something that, you know, damages or hurts others. You see that our actions, you know, do not harm other, you know, other people and other beings. So how could we do that, if we ask? Is that we need to see that, you know, we need to investigate our own state of mind, okay? And we need to say, okay, is my mind in a negative state or in a positive state? If our mind is in a negative state, and if we let our mind go in a negative state, then, you know, we will do the wrong thing and we will experience the wrong thing. So what we really need to do is we have to recognize that, okay, I can't let my mind be in a negative state. You see, I need to change that. I need to bring it back home, so to speak. And I need to direct my mind into positive thinking. But our mind is in a positive thinking, that's great, you see. We just let it be there or try to enhance it. So that's what we mean conducting our life properly in everyday situations or practicing Dharma.
अने येल अने संजी येन धनाता रान ड्राइव अने तंडी के दुंगे न्योंगे ताप ठामे योजरी तंतु छामलो के घरां दे कोच बाजे सांतं एवं सांतों ना अने तोलेंगे मिकोचे नियाथा की उंगरिस
And we also need to take responsibility for our own actions, good and bad. Okay? And there's an accountability here. And maybe in the Buddhist language, we say we need to own our actions. You see, we can't blame other people or situations for the things going wrong in our life. You see, we always point our finger at someone. See? But what really it is, if things are going wrong in my life, it's more to do with my own negative actions, you see. And who did that? Me. I, the Tenzin, did it, you see. So I'm therefore responsible for my actions. I need to own my actions. Okay? There's an ownership, you see, here. And so then, you know, don't be mad with the bad things happening now because we already performed the actions. But we're trying to say, okay, by my experience of these bad things, may I be free of those negativities I already created. Okay? Now, if we want to be really more sort of a, what we call broad-minded people, or we want to expand our way of thinking, and this is where we can do the Tonglen practice, the practice of taking others' problem and suffering upon ourselves and giving happiness and goodness to other people. So then what we do is, okay, not only that I'm very self-centered, oh my gosh, I did the bad thing, I'm experiencing it, okay, now I don't have to experience it anymore. Well, that's still self-centered. Well, that's, you know, that's all right. It's a good way to think. But now we say, okay, by my experience of this particular situation, I'm sure there are many other people and beings who are experiencing the same thing or may have experienced this kind of thing. By my experience of this negativity, may they do not have to experience such, you know, problems ever. Okay? So may this experience of mine fulfills some greater purpose that other people do not have to experience it. So that's how we genuinely practice. We're not mouthing it, or we're not faking it all out. We just, this is how, you know, we really sincerely do our Tonglen practice, the practice of giving happiness to others and taking others' suffering to oneself.
Jing is and two lambs was ten years, the tea lamachavan was the horse and tongues.
So, what I've just explained here, I mean, this is exactly what we learn. One of the really very central techniques in the Lojong practice, mind training or thought transformation practice, is how can we transform the adverse conditions into favorable conditions? Okay, so this is one way to do it. You know, you adopt a positive attitude towards the problems you're encountering, and then you think about altruistically so that this bad experience, you see, it can fulfill a certain greater purpose. Okay, so that goes with our Tonglen practice. And then those of us who recite Guru Puja or Lama Chöpa, we know there are powerful stanzas there which do deal with or speak to us about transforming adverse conditions into
conditions.
So those are a few thoughts I would like to share before returning to our wonderful text. You know, of course, these are all not really based on some deep experiences I claim to have, you know, but definitely these are based on the Dharma education I have been through, you know. So I'm just sharing this with you, you know, with two purposes, as I said, a good reminder for those who already know about this stuff, and a new information for the new people. So basically we all need to, you know, pay attention to this.
No, no.
So let's go back to this text called, you know, just to be simple, Personal Advices from Kadamba Geshe's. Just to remind you that the two cousins from some eastern part of Tibet, you know, they asked, you know, a question to Dromthenpa, and Dromthenpa was responding to them. And of course, his response consists of a number of statements. And why we are getting stuck, if you think, is because I tried to elaborate and, you know, unpack each statement. And the last time it said, the first thing he said is, you know, you need to meditate many times on death, impermanence of things. Okay, so we talked about that. What does it mean? Okay, and Then he said, meditate many times on the law of karma and its outcomes.
Onas, that is it. That is you in the Uganda, Rangi Kelongbe, and Sundon Tapar Shas, that thing about the Amazon Hakogris.
And another statement as a response to their question is, you know, whatever vows and commitments you have taken, you need to keep them pure or intact.
Onas.
And that is so crucial to us.
Onas. That is any rank, Kelang be sung, 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 sung,
so if you really look at the wording, it says, rank, Kelang, but what you have promised to keep. That means, you know, you made a promise. That's what he's telling us, right? And sung dom means, you know, what we said, we are going to keep vows and commitments. That means we need to safeguard them, and these need to be kept pure.
Yes.
So once again, I would like to emphasize the point that as we are going through this question and answer, Q, you know, and A is here. But don't think as if we are just here to do some kind of a study group, you know. Okay, what questions did they ask, you know? What did Dongtenpa say to them as if we have nothing to do with it, you know? When he says, you know, whatever you have promised, just take the you as meaning me. You know, Dongtenpa is speaking directly and personally to me, you know. Don't think like, okay, the two cousins, you see, you as two cousins. No, then it becomes less of a personal relevance. We just have to say, okay, Dongtenpa is speaking to me, said, what you have promised, meaning me, I have promised, I need to keep those vows and commitments pure.
Now,
if we are trying to unpack here, you know, there are many things to talk about. Now, one might entertain this kind of thought that, okay, I have not, you know, taken, for example, refuge vows, which is very fundamental basic vows, which means we're not taking any other vows, you see, beyond that. Right, so therefore, well, this means this doesn't apply to me, you know, so I can just do whatever freaky things I can do, you know, there's no rules here now. Gijal didn't say those, but just to get the message strongly to ourselves. But is what we need to understand is, when we talk about negativities, we could think of negativities arising from two different sources. Okay, one is what we call rangshen yikhat madhava, certain actions. You see, they are considered negative because of the way these actions are. Okay, nobody need to lay out the rules and regulations. You see, it just, if anybody, doesn't matter whether you believe in any Dharma, Sharma, Rama, whatever, not. Okay, but if you do that action, that is a negative action because of the very nature of that action. So when we perform those negative actions, we have to experience the negative outcomes. You see, we are really not talking about some religious groups or followers here, right? Anybody who does such actions which are considered negative by way of their very entity or the nature need to pay the price. So you say, gives an example, as I often talk about, seems very basic, right? The 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind, okay? This has, you know, It's not like, okay, I'm not a Buddhist or I'm not even a religious person or whatever. It doesn't matter. If I do them, so some way I get a leeway here, you know, some exception to the rule. No. Doesn't matter whether one is a believer or non-believer or Dharma, Sharma, Rama, whatever it is. But if one does any of these actions, right, negative actions, body, spirit, mind, just because these actions are negative, from their very nature or entity point of view, this will bring negative outcomes. Okay, that means universal thing, applies to one and all. Okay, now there's another source of negativities, which is that when we make a promise or a pledge, okay, for example, we talk about, say, in the Buddhist community, the good examples are monks and nuns. They have taken upon themselves to take the monastic vows. Okay, so once you have promised to do that, if you transgress your vows, now such transgression constitutes negativity, which may become negativity for the lay people because there is no such rules. You know, said I'm going to be, you know. So this is like how the negativity due to, you see, pledging oneself to keep certain rules and regulations, and we call it morality or ethics here. Are you with me? You see, so there are two sources of negativities, right? So either we do something, action, which are negative by way of their very nature, nothing to do with Buddha's rule or somebody's rule, it's just the way it is, okay? And then there are certain things, our actions become negative only because we are transgressing vows and commitments that we have pledged to keep, and now we are not keeping them.
No, no, that thing you told me, and that Shantra Dhamma Yonki, you know, Miki Chöpungu Tsurungu Thawala, Tha Chandu Dhomba Karilangyo Na Sungja Kiyoyore, Chetsa Khelambi Sungja Tha Gaubya Thacha Dhobya Lhaji Tani Yore, Tha Sungu Yore, Tha Sungu Yore.
So of course in Buddhism we talk about many different levels of vows and commitments, right? Okay, so at the very foundation level, one says, okay, I'm going to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, so I'm going to take the refuge precepts or the vows. Okay, so in which case, now, not only that, we should not do the 10 negative actions of body, spirit, and mind. Now, additionally, we need to keep the refuge precepts. And what are the refuge precepts involved? They are categorized into two kinds. They are what we call prohibitory precepts, the things we should not do, which go against Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And the complementary precepts, what we should do, which will enhance our refuge practice.
That thing told us. Ani gisuk domba yungki ina ta rajung ma ina cuma ina da tetawa ina ta gisuk domba yungki ina ta tangi ngumat zukangka tol gisuk domba sungguh keris.
So now if someone has taken the what we call the first level of the monastic vows, okay, not only that one has taken the refuge precepts, now that as a foundation, one has taken the first level of ordination, which for lack of a better word in English called novice monk and novice nuns. Okay, and it's called Shramana and Shraman in Sanskrit. So here, now the novice monks and nuns need to keep the monks and nuns' vows here, whatever nuns' vows they have promised to keep.
That thing told, when that any, that thing I did it. Dandu jine, gini ko dumba yung hina ti ati sungres. That thing gisu ko dumba yun, gini ko dumba. Shetam mikhi chobung tsurin shi, ti tola shambir domba shi, ti tola genyik domba shi, ti tola gesyuk domba shi, ta tenzu kang sungo kundu was.
Let me make a little correction here. That, okay, so let's say, you know, X here has not committed yet to any vows and, you know, commitments, right? At least this person should not do any of the 10 negative actions about his speech in mind. Okay, because that has less to do with rules and regulations, because as I said, the very nature of these actions are negative. Now somehow the X has decided to take the refuge precepts, while additionally he or she needs to keep them. While now the X wants to, you know, take a layperson's vows, we call upasaka or upasika vows. Well, in addition to the refuge precepts, now need to keep the layperson's vows. Okay. Now the ex decided, okay, I'm going to try to be monk and nun, so I will become a novice here. So now I need to keep the novice, you know, vows and commitments.
That thing you told that, Gesu Shi, and that Genyi Gesu Shi, and that Gelong Domba Tan Du Shi Niya, Gelong Pata, Gelong Mak Domba Yung King, that Kunoma Tizok Tolo Kanga, that Ganon Pamani Domus Songres.
And now the ex decided, okay, now I'm ready to take the full ordination, right? So either it's a full ordination of a monk or a full ordination of a nun, right? Now what happens is, this ex has to give so many vows and commitments. It's not like, okay, I'm going to the higher level and I can say goodbye to the later one. No, you're adding more to that. You see, you're adding more vows to the refuge practice, you're adding more vows to the novice, you're adding now this whole lot of other vows and commitments.
No, no. That he told, that Dumba Sumsundi in Andra, that Chimba in a Sangusim with Dumba in a Chimba Galen Kugur, Jesus, that Sangusim with Dumba Sungugaris.
So now I'm just kind of laying out the whole the structure of the Buddhist vows and commitments that one could take, you know. Now, you see, whether you're a lay practitioner or you're a monk or non-practitioner, you said, okay, now I want to also take bodhisattva vows, okay, because you don't have to become a monk or nun to take bodhisattva vows, which is higher level vows, okay. So which means now we added more, you see, to our part here. Right, so now we not only have the refuge vows, now we have the, okay, let me run through the whole list. We have to abandon the 10 negative actions, body, spirit, and mind. We have to keep the layperson's vows. We have to keep the novice vows. We have to keep the full ordination vows, if you want a monk or nun. If not, you see, we have to have the bodhisattva vows. Or as a monk or nun, you have the bodhisattva vows.
No, that he told me, Mark, that Dombalang, Mark wants you in the Dombalang, you know.
And then, of course, you know, we still have more vows we could take, right? Either even as a lay practitioner or a monk and non-practitioner, now we can take the tantric vows, which is the highest kind. Okay? So now if you look at the whole spectrum of vows and commitments that one said, Mr. X or the Mrs. X said, I'm going to do it. So if you start from the, you know, gecko all the way to the tantric vows, that's a whole lot of, you know, range of vows and commitments one said one will keep, right? So what does it mean when the Dhamma says you need to keep the vows and commitments you pledge to keep really pure? Means all of this is the vows and commitments, you know, that we talk about in Buddhism.
So
it's also important for us to consider this matter seriously, that it seems to make it easy to pledge, you know, make a promise, okay, I'll do it. But then once it comes to doing it, keeping the vows, we know how challenging and difficult that is, you know. So we want to take time and investigate how much can I really handle here, okay? And don't jump into taking all kinds of vows and commitments, you know, because it's easy to make the promise, but very hard to keep the promise.
So that answer the dumb to Yabush Masuna, and the rank, there's a Sanji company in the Karinata, when the Zul and the rank Jule Shevalta, Kichimichalgares.
So what happens if we don't, you know, keep our promise here. Okay. While it is not a statutory law here, which says you will be sent behind the bar for a certain number of days or whatever, okay? But really what happens is it's spiritually detrimental, okay? And because what we want is, we want to cultivate all the positive qualities in our mind. We want to progress spiritually. We want to mature spiritually. But as we keep on making promises and breaking promises, this breaking promises become an obstacle here on the way, that it becomes detrimental, that now we are not making much progress, or we are just kind of, you know, how to say, lacking behind. So this is what happens.
So that the soon you understand.
In the Vinaya texts or the discourses dealing with ethics, it is clearly stated that one needs to safeguard or protect one's vows and commitments just as one would protect one's pupils or one's eyes. Okay? It's that sensitive. You know, because of course we need to protect our whole body. You know, we don't want to get hurt in any situation. But then we do have to make choices sometimes. So what often people do is eyes are the really important organs, you know. So we try to protect our eyes in the same way that we need to protect the vows and commitments, that we have.
Yeah. Mee tsa chi ge ta thela na bi shong ge ko mee den do se ta mo ka gu ro was. Ma den da ba le thela cha na ko cha chi. Ta ni mee na le thela ta ma yong wa shen do se ka gu do was.
So if there's a dust storm or somebody, you know, throw dust at us, what do? We try to protect our eyes, right? We don't care that much. If we get a dust in our hair, we can, you know, that's okay. But we don't want the dust to get into our eyes.
Ta de wen na ka ge na ka na bi ne do hi ar. Tam sing yang ka don ba ya nga ma ne ya se ta ga ji yang sa ma re ya ge pu ti du se ne pu kan ki ta me kan ki se ta ki se ge sung yu re ti na kan ki se ge du se ne nga ma de su bu ta hin de de to bi na ko le ma ta ko de ni ko sto che na de ka se ti su ni de ge sa tu na ji de go re.
And another example that often is given by the Tibetan Lamas, you know, with regard to protecting or safeguarding our vows and commitments, is they give this example of a yak. You know, that must be a special yak. Not every yak does that. It's just that if this special yak, probably we can think of, that when its tail gets stuck into a bush or something, that, you know, it doesn't want to lose even one or two strands of hair from its tail. It just sits there until somehow the whole tail is out safely. You see, so we need to protect our vows and commitments, you know, as good as this particular yak does with his or her tail in the, you know, in the bush.
And then the yak does not get the
yak set over. So I think there's some special yak.
Here. I
think that yak considered his hair really very precious and, you know, very valuable.
That did it. So that. Dansi de dongba de ene song dong dangpar xie se, bi dangwa yawe song res ka nang duwa, de xie.
So here, Dongdaba tells us, you know, you need to keep your vows and commitments that you pledge to keep pure, right? So I just kind of highlighted what the kind of levels of vows that one, you know, could take and then one should keep, you know, pure.
Oh, yes. Dan de yungi mawal jishin na shangri dongba yawar was.
So now, kind of, bring this thing home here is, I think most of us here, we have at least taken refuge precepts. So somebody like us, who are monks and nuns, then we have too many vows to keep. And then I think many of us here have received the tantric empowerments or initiations. So now when we look at these different levels of vows that we could take, as I said, from the what we call individual emancipation vows, which include monks and nuns vows, all the way up to bodhisattvas and tantric vows, right? So should we transgress any of these vows? Is there a difference in terms of, you know, seriousness? And yes, there is. Just kind of give an idea here. Let's say someone with an individual emancipation vows, which includes a lot of vows, okay, maybe the one we know mostly is the monks and nuns vows here, right? If you break 10 of those, whereas somebody with a tantric vow breaks a very minor tantric vow here, that breaking the minor tantric vow is more serious than breaking 10, you know, individual emancipation vows here.
No, that tende ke ta mangbo ta tren ke gwa ke min ni na san no tra zo san no ton ke te sing e hubris ne.
Of course, there are too many things to talk about here, and I'm not going to take time here to just get stuck with this matter, but I'm just seeing one or two things here just to give you a taste of what it is, you know, so that you will explore or find out more about these things.
Yami chodi kana yores ko ani sodak dombak ta 전에 예배 딱 전에 교회 많이 먼저 저랬어. 옛날 나 그 아니 때 다 그래서 그래. 넘어든 계획 다 예배 때 중 예배 리스크 안 나온다고 하지.
Even great Indian master Atisha was, you know, reported to have said that in his life he never transgressed any of his monk's vows. You know, he was so meticulous about that. But when he said it comes to keeping the tantric vows pure, he said that was a very tough time. He said there were cases of transgressions.
Ani kare sorta, dewe halje sunga li lhagyor. Ma ti sunje sunga ke kali khayen.
So whether Adisha was really speaking about himself or more about us or others, that's another, you know, question we need to find out. But what he really said, if we take that at a surface, you know, face value, what he's really telling us is this: that it is relatively speaking easy to keep the monastic vows than the tantric vows and commitments.
So
he said, so even such a, you know, great being as Atisha, I'm talking about the vulnerability to transgressing tantric vows, right? Now, how much more that vulnerability is in our case or situations, you know? And of course, in his case, or in the case of others who are like Atisha, if they transgress something, they wouldn't even let any time pass by. They would do the purification practice, they would do the confession, you know, not like, you know, we do, you know, we just never do or we postpone it, you know, altogether to some other date, doing our confession, you know. So what really I think is a wonderful thing for us to do is in the morning we get up and we cultivate good thoughts, and then during the daytime we try to put those thoughts into action as much as we could, or keep our vows and commitments as best as we could. But should we transgress any of vows or commitments or do something, you know, negative in the evening or before we go to bed, I think it's important for us to sincerely confess or purify those. Okay, don't let a day pass by. Okay, because in some way we are human, you know, we might, you know, do the things, you know, because of our situation. But it's really important for us not to let them be the mistakes or the errors, but try to confess them in the evening. And then the next statement from Dondaba, he says, you know, one should cultivate love and compassion, you know, repeatedly or many times. That's what he said. Okay, so then here we need, okay, if we need to cultivate love and compassion, how to do that? He said that's an important thing to learn about. So before we decide to cultivate love and compassion, we got to understand what is love, what is compassion, what is it, right, that we want to cultivate. Do you get this kind of feeling? Oh yeah, I know what love and compassion are. That's not too difficult to understand, you know. So it's almost like, give me a break, you know, I know what these are. Those of you who have you know, a certain understanding of love and compassion, you know, that still is, I think, coming to you more through intellectual, prism, or is intellectual understanding. You know, we, you know, we have not yet understood what love and compassion through experiences did. So it's really very important for us to understand what love and compassion are, you know, exploring our experiences or based on experiences.
Sambata, sambata hiji de gomdi se mikba ta namba se ni mi yu se ani namba se tereki ma ra ki ni sang tang khres ni ni ni
whether we want to cultivate love or compassion, you know, we cultivate meaning meditation here, you know, we need to consider two things with regard to each of them. What is the focus of love and what is its subjective aspect? What is the focus of compassion and what is its subjective aspect?
Sumta, pati hama wana te, taka sendo se ne ta, hingi samba kita, ane ta, devuta jiwa yunga kyo samta, tende ke samba te, ausa de ya puta re te yena ya, ko samba de hingi gomene gomea te ndigyu amaris.
So if you really don't understand these dimensions of love and compassion, then if you simply sit in a meditation and try to generate a positive attitude, like, you know, you just try to cultivate love and compassion for others, it's a good effort. You know, maybe there's some virtue in it, but we really don't understand what they are. It's very important for us to understand the different dimensions of love and compassion. Now, talking about love, for example, in its dimensions, right, we talk about different kinds of love. There is something we call immeasurable love, chamba cheme, and then we what we call the great love, or chamba chembo, or ma metri.
So, that is the thing you can't go on, number two, chamba yango.
So whether we want to cultivate what is called immeasurable love or great love, in terms of its subjective aspect, the subjective experience, it's just the same. But in terms of the focus, there is a big difference here.
That carries na samba chembu gomdi zani meba sengi thamchi le sengi cheme bala gomne tin diga me sengi thamchi sengi thame ki gombi ne sengi thamchi na ndi binga ka me abre chetu sonsa.
So the focus of great love or Maha Maitri is that of all sentient beings, nobody to be excluded here. Okay? Whereas immeasurable love, its focus is immeasurable number of sentient beings, or even you can make it countless. Okay, that means, you know, we couldn't count after a while. You know, we run out of count, but that doesn't still mean we have included every sentient being in the focus. Okay? Countless number of sentient beings is not the same as all sentient beings. So the focus of great love, Maha Maitri, is every sentient being, all sentient beings, literally.
That means Chevan the was.
So now you see the difference in terms of the focus, right? The between immeasurable love and
immeasurable love and great love. So
as I said earlier, that in terms of subjective aspect of the experience of love, whether it's immeasurable love or great love, is just the same. So what is that subjective experience? It is wishing others to be happy. Okay, that is the subjective dimension or aspect of love. You sincerely wish others to be happy. So just as we can make those distinctions between immeasurable love and a great love, now we can do the same thing with immeasurable compassion and great compassion or Mahakaruna.
No, no. So that mikba ge kunyi ge sa nyingi chembo da nyingi cheme se ga se re nyingi cheme se ya de dangi ngema na ise mi pe gon chebo de yabres.
So we can differentiate between immeasurable compassion and great compassion in terms of their focus, not in terms of their subjective experience, because it's just the same. But in terms of the focus, again, we can find the same kind of difference that we found between immeasurable love and great love.
Oh, nice. Ta namba jibayi karayasana dunghi ta tangche tereka.
The subjective aspect of compassion is just the same, which is wishing others to be free from suffering or problem.
Sonja ta shamba chimbu dan shamba semi gombi nanda ni chimbu dan ni semi gombi nanda ta dosi ni sige thangi la me pe ta namba manda wa jin dosi ni te gom jin chan ta to sang
So the focus of great compassion is again all sentient beings, whereas the focus of immeasurable compassion could be, you see, many, many sentient beings or countless sentient beings. Now let's say when we cultivate either love or compassion, we need to bring those dimensions of love and compassion in our meditation, right? We need to understand what is love, what is compassion, what is its focus, and all that. Now let's say when we are cultivating, or you're cultivating love, say, if your love only includes the people, your family members and friends, that may more be closer to cultivating immeasurable love, but not definitely going to be great love.
That universe is in the any kangal is in the tambi and zambilin cinema, that link yin, link yin, jc, any or tendik, any that kangal sound, devot de shona sound beginning, that sound karate. Yenda kanga any pay sound of matona, sing it yenda to sound of matona.
And we may also cultivate love for all the people and beings in our universe or the world. Okay, in the Buddhist cosmology, you know, we talk about, you see, there is the Mount Meru in the center, and there are four continents, you see, in the four directions, and then there are others there. You see, so there are beings in many parts of these continents and universe. So universe is beyond what we are thinking right now. So if we are so thinking about universal love in the sense of loving all the beings and people in our world, but then we forget about the beings in other continents, our love is still immeasurable love. It's not great love.
You know, but Leela and Avshina, Doa Ritu Kusinke Thamche, Devata Demba Hyo Samta, Tendisam Thamba Yina, Ta Tinala and Sinke Thamye Dugaris.
Now, whereas if we think about all the six types of beings in samsara or cyclical existence, the six migrators, and so we include everybody, and then we cultivate love or compassion for all of them, now that kind of love and compassion is considered great love and great compassion.
No, no. And that's when somebody thinks that man to gom sindina ka nung do was gom tante duksaresta.
So as Dongdamba is advising us to cultivate love and compassion repeatedly or many times, so that's how to do it. By cultivating love and compassion, we are generating just incalculable or immeasurable positive energy or merit. There are many positive outcomes from cultivating great love and great compassion, or even, you know, immeasurable love and immeasurable compassion. Let's say we cultivate this immeasurable love for all humans. If we truly mean it, right, we really wish everybody to be happy, every human, fellow human beings, we are never going to be jealous of them, because jealousy has no room and space here. And you know, because we want others to be happy. So when we cultivate great love, what we are basically really experiencing or try to experience is we are wishing everybody to be happy. So everybody meaning literally, you know, not in a kind of a poetic sense or something here. Okay. So when we want everybody to be happy, and when everybody is happy, so how can we be jealous of them or not be happy? Or we can't be like, you know, oh yeah, this whole section of the people and beings want to be happy, but not this one, you know. Well, then we are not cultivating great love. So we must not adopt the perspective as Kesala is trying to demonstrate, like a one-eyed perspective. You see, if we close one eye and look with the other one, what we see is just half of what we could normally see, you know. And then that's not right. We only see half, 50% of the things, and then the other 50% is left out. You know, we can't adopt that kind of a perspective. And then if we cultivate great compassion for others, means we wish everybody to be free from problem or suffering, there is no space left for us to get angry with others. Because anger and great compassion are incompatible. Then they don't go together. And I think we will stop there today. Shivashtu again.
Shivashtu.
I'm going to read this question first. It would seem that since emptiness of inherent existence applies to the space between self and phenomena, that the distance between myself and others is also a mere imputation. Is this true? And if so, is this a valid basis for the practice of Tonglen, the exchange of suffering and happiness between oneself and others? The answer to the first part of the question, yes, the space between self and phenomena is also a mere imputation. It's just a label like any other phenomenon. Okay, so everything is merely imputed by terms and concepts. Okay, that's what emptiness of inherent existence is. Now the second part of the question, whether that is a valid basis for practicing Tonglen. What I want to say here is that you know, every Tonglen practitioner does not necessarily have an understanding of emptiness, okay? It is possible that one has a great understanding of emptiness and then practice Tonglen. But there are practitioners who do Tonglen practice, the practice of taking others' suffering upon oneself and giving happiness to others. That's a whole mouthful to say. I'll repeat 100 times in a translation. But anyway, Tonglen practice, that's what we call it. But it is possible that one may do that practice without understanding of emptiness. But I want to also say that if one understands how everything is merely imputed by terms and concepts, it's a mere label, it's just a mere imputation label, then one is really getting at the heart of the matter of understanding emptiness. You see, if one understands that, how everything is merely labeled, then one is really getting to understand what emptiness is. So what we really need to understand or consider is that every phenomenon, everything that exists, it does not exist from its own side. You see, it is what we have imputed onto it. You see, that's how they exist. So therefore, everything is called mere label or imputation.
Yes.
So many people get this wrong when we say that nothing exists in and of itself, or there is no inherent existence. Then people come to conclusion, oh my God, then nothing exists at all. Well, that is a nihilistic position, right? You are annihilating, you are undermining the existence of everything. That's what is not meant by, you know, by the statement. When we say that everything is emptiness, what we also mean is that there's something that exists, but what really exists is also a mere label. It is an imputation. Okay? So there's something we're affirming. You know, we are not, how to say, annihilating or undermining or knocking out the existence of everything, but as a matter of fact, we are saying that things do exist, but how? They exist as mere labels. There are many who get confused with emptiness, the notion or the concept of emptiness, you know, so we should not just take into everything, everybody talking about emptiness, you see, because many don't get it, you know. We really have to investigate the matter very thoroughly, what emptiness is. So when we talk about how everything is merely labeled, in order to label, there has to be a basis for labeling, right? There has to be a basis of imputation or label. A great Indian sage philosopher realized being Arya Nagarjuna said, as Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, there is no phenomenon that is not dependently arisen, existent. There is no phenomena that is not emptiness. So what really Nagarjuna is saying is that, you know, the dependent arising and emptiness, they complement each other. Okay, so things exist dependently, and therefore things are empty of inherent existence. I think many people seem to claim that emptiness is not that hard to understand or realize, but I don't agree with that. Okay? When we look at the life stories of great masters in ancient India and Tibet, including Lama Tsongkhapa or Jerem Buche or Gyawa Loksan Drapa, all the names meaning the same person sitting there. How much purification and efforts he had to make in order to realize what emptiness is. So that tells us that emptiness is not an easy thing to understand. You know, otherwise, why did he have to go through so much, you know, efforts? At the beginning of a very excellent work of Lama Tsongkhapa called Lekshe Nyingbo, The Essence of Eloquent Elucidation or Presentation, Lama Tsongkhapa says that There have been many, people, meaning he masters, with great qualities. But even with greatest of efforts they met, they failed to understand what emptiness is. But by the blessing and inspiration of Manjushri, I have been fortunate to realize what it is. Okay? So that tells us that emptiness is not an easy thing to realize. Okay? Many highly qualified, or what, many great qualities, masters failed in their attempts. And so what we learn from Lama Tsongkhapa's life story, for example, which is true with many other lamas and practitioners, is that one needs to do this tremendous amount of purification and accumulation practice to be able to realize what emptiness is. So Lama Tsongkhapa, he did an intensive purification and accumulation practice in a place called Walka in central Tibet. Okay? And he accumulated as many as something now this number is probably going to be wrong, but let me see, there has to be 5 zeros after 35. So that's what? 3 million some, prostrations. And he did the mandala offering on a stone base. You know, as Geshe-la was trying to describe the size of it, you know, that must be a feet, you know. And he saw it there. And how his wrist were torn apart, you know, by making those mandala, cleaning the mandala base and offering so many mandala offerings. So through such intense purification practice and accumulation of merit, that Lama Tsongkhapa was finally able to see the 35 Buddhas of the confession practice and other deities, including Manjushri, and then realize what emptiness is. So by the grace of Guru Manjushri, I have realized emptiness out of love and compassion. Now I'm going to explain what it is. That's how he state things in his salutation and promise of composition in that work. So we often say that we need to practice method and wisdom together. They need to be brought into unity, right? And often the wisdom we talk about is the wisdom realizing emptiness as it is, and the method is often we talk about cultivating bodhicitta or altruism. Now here, what I want to say is again, or remind you for those who understand, who have heard this before, is there are practitioners who first realize emptiness and then cultivate bodhicitta. There are others who first cultivate bodhicitta and then realize emptiness. Okay? So such distinctions are made among the bodhisattvas. The bodhisattvas with higher faculties or intelligence, their approach is first they realize what emptiness is and then they cultivate bodhicitta. But then those who do not have the similar faculties, first they cultivate bodhicitta and then they wisdom realizing emptiness. So from a very broader high level perspective, I think it's more important to cultivate bodhicitta first than emptiness. Why? Because even the realized beings of the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, they have realization of emptiness, but what they don't have is bodhicitta. Okay? So bodhicitta is what differentiates even these realized beings from the other school of Buddhism from those of the bodhisattvas.
Mm-hmm.
So without bodhicitta, there's no way, literally, to become an enlightened being or Buddha. So as it is very important, and we would like to become an enlightened being or Buddha, so therefore, it is important for us to cultivate bodhicitta.
So
So we will stop there today and let us dedicate our merit. By the power of our collective merit, may Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness, flourishes throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great holy beings and masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality.
Domna, magin sinji tamji, hiji dhuba da nyumi bin dhuba ni da treni, ane sanji kumparam bhi tam ju ju ji.
In short, we dedicate our merit for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the mental obscuration to nirvana called delusions and mental obscuration to omniscience called imprints of delusions, and may we all reach enlightened state quickly.
Guru Renamadolo Niyadaya Amen.